Hello and welcome to this continuing episode 3, I think it is, of Chess Pieces, our little adaptive workshops looking at A Game at Chess by Thomas Middleton. Immediately I'm going to start with a content warning that there are scenes and discussions of attempted sexual violence, as well as the cover-up thereof that follows afterwards. This is a scene, the first scene of Act 2 that we're looking at today. Logically enough, that follows on from Act 1, which had a lot more adaptive questions than I think Act 2 is going to have overall. Certainly this scene, we may have fewer issues. So in fact, this episode might be very short. I don't know if it's going to be very short. It might not. We may just generally get into the characters a lot more and get more into more general scene discussion rather than necessarily the questions of adaptation. As ever, we're working towards a full cast audio adaptation, which might be quite adapty because of the nature of the text, but also looking at cut down, simplified sort of concert versions that we might do as readings, where, again, we're trying to reduce the size of the cast, but also where we're looking in the far future to doing a big, big production of the whole thing. Reading with us today, we have Eric, we have Liza, we have Lindsay, and we have Emma. Say hello to the people at home.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Remembering that we're an audio medium. Never mind. And I'm your host, Robert Crichton. We will all be reading various parts. I'm not going to say who's everyone's reading at this time, because I can't remember, because everyone's been given a number rather than names, because this script is really hard to read, because everybody hasn't got given names. Our continuing, ongoing problem of how to refer to these characters, of which we haven't really come up with any answers yet. So what we're going to do is to just get into the text. First of all, we're going to just sort of dive in with the first opening gambit scene to see where this takes us. Act 2, scene 1. We have the White Queen's Pawn, who is going to be performed by Emma, I think, off the top of my head. And we have the Black Bishop's Pawn, will be read by Lindsay. I might swap these around later on, but at the moment that's who you are. The White Queen's Pawn has a book with her. This is a book that was given to her earlier by the Black Bishop, who was pretending to be awfully nice, but really wants to... politically wants to convert her over to their side so that they can win the chess match. But he has other things in mind as well. So enter the White Queen's Pawn reading.
And here again, it is the daughter's duty to obey her confessor's commands in all things, without exception or expostulation. 'Tis the most general rule that e'er I read of. Yet, when I think how boundless virtue is, goodness and grace, is gently reconciled, and then it appears well to have the power of the dispenser as uncircumscribed.
She's hard upon't. 'Twas the most modest key that I could use to open my intents. What little or no pains goes to some people. What have we here? A sealed note. Whence this? To the Black Bishop's Pawn, these help me. Strange, who subscribes it? Oh, the Black King, what would he? Pawn sufficiently holy, but unmeasurably politic. We had late intelligence from our most industrious servant, famous in all parts of Europe, our Knight of the Black House, that you have at this instant in chase the White Queen's Pawn, and very likely by the carriage of your game to entrap and take her. These are therefore to require you, by the burning affection I bear to the rape of devotion, that speedily, upon the surprisal of her, by all watchful advantage, you make some attempt upon the White Queen's person, whose fall or prostitution our lust most violently rages for. Sir, after my desire hath took a julep for its own inflammation, that yet scorches me. I shall have cooler time to think of yours. Shath passed the general rule, the large extent of our prescriptions for obedience, and yet with what alacrity of soul her eyes move on the letters.
I'm going to pause you there, because there's interesting structural questions to ask about what is happening here, because the White Queen pawn comes on, talks about what she's been given, which, you know, a book saying you should do whatever your confessor says, i.e., in this case, the Black Bishop's pawn or the Black Bishop, which obviously has a slightly sinister component to it. But it would probably have a more sinister component if it followed this speech, possibly. And also just within an audio format, I'm wondering whether having one character come on who says not a lot and another character says a lot and then we return to the other character is the right way round for that to work. Feel free to disagree. Liza?
Yeah, I mean, I think I quite like knowing up front what the White Queen's pawn is reading about. Because it gives us a sense of what the Black Bishop's pawn is then going to try and twist to their advantage. The other thing is that if we move the White Queen's pawn's first speech down, then we have a bit of awkwardness stage-wise because we have the Black Bishop's pawn entering, giving an expositional speech. Then instead of noticing him, the White Queen's pawn would have this protracted aside before presumably noticing him with Holy Sir. I don't know. Where had you thought to move that first speech to?
Well, I was thinking it could be, because again, we're within an audio medium. I think it's probably fine for the stage, but I'm thinking that actually you whack it in just after he's necessarily... somewhere possibly within his speech that towards the end when, you know, he's contemplating things that actually the two speeches slightly overlap. So somewhere within the Sir After My Desire have took so that it then naturally overlaps into things and them seeing each other and talking to each other. This is, to a degree, an editing question, actually. There's nothing structural in terms of how we record it to necessarily change. The two characters are quite well established, hopefully, in the hearers' minds, because they've been the central figures of the first act. So that's sort of what's in my mind. I'm just, in terms of the information, I mean, I think also there's other stuff. By all means, wave, by the way, if you have other thoughts you want to throw in at this point. I'm just going to dance around my thoughts. Eric?
Yeah, I'm just thinking, like, sort of, you would also have sound effects to sort of convey things. So you, like, for example, you would have, you know, it takes up a letter would be the sound of, you know, someone actually opening an envelope and stuff.
Mm.
And, you know, with what alacrity of soul her eyes move on the letters because she's reading a book. If that happens at the same time, then you would have someone flipping pages kind of thing. It, obviously, softer in the background so you don't overlap with the speech too much. But, like, yeah, it would... I don't know. There's a part of me going, you know, if you put Sir After My Desire have took a julep first and then... Or, like, he reads the letter, and then you've got her eyes move on the letters, and then sort of she reads out what is being read would be interesting, I guess, kind of.
Well yeah, because there's the alternative formulation is the Black Bishop's first two lines opens the scene. We go to the White Queen reading the letter, because having talked about her reading the book, we hear that, and then he goes to his own correspondence. Because the nice thing about that is, again, maybe in an audio medium, it's rather than she's hard upon it, the White Queen's pawn is hard upon it, immediately establishing who's there. And then his own letter establishes who he is almost immediately afterwards. So that gap between people speaking and then knowing who the hell they are is diminished, which I think is possibly important. Eric?
Well, I guess also in an audio medium, because you would have sort of, you know, the proximity to the microphone to convey if it's a thought or if it's a sort of, you know, out loud, you would have sort of the Queen's pawn going, and here again, and then she reads it, and then sort of her thoughts would be separate, so you wouldn't have to worry about distinguishing what's in her head and what's outside of her, sort of, and like, oh, holy sir, and so on and so forth, it would happen as a separate thing. So, like, I think the order wouldn't really matter so long as you don't have someone just sort of going, yeah, ultimately and utterly radio silent.
Yeah, and there's all sorts of other structural things where actually the Black Bishop's pawn's mission could be introduced a lot earlier as well, because it's not fundamentally clear in Act One what he's actually there to do. And actually there are some issues about what is in the letter that don't necessarily read as actually what they mean. Lindsay?
I mean, I think you must have discussed this before, but in terms of an audio adaptation, what about naming the characters as well as occasionally then referring to their designations as chess pieces?
Yes, I mean, that's the thing, is just, but then we have to invent all the names, and as of yet we haven't done that yet. I mean, not inherently a bad idea. We are looking at the more extreme edge of actual adaptation, making adjustments, which is, it's painful to some because they want to keep it exactly the same. But this play is not necessarily going to survive without some adjustment for someone just diving in and going, what the hell's going on? So that as many props as we can. So names are important. And one of the questions, because actually the way I've been numbering these scripts so that we can read them, is actually there are some parts where I'm starting to go, well, I'm not going to number them because they're not really people. They just say a few lines. They're just supernumeraries. And actually trying to figure out who are the actual characters that matter so that we can focus in on how many characters we can have on in the play as well, because actually there also comes a point of there are only so many different sounding voices in the universe before people start getting very, very lost as to what's going on and how can we simplify the characters who matter in this text. Other thoughts while I look something up. I'm just checking something which I'm just wondering about. So just on actually what this letter is doing, because this, you know, he's getting a letter from the Black King telling him what he's doing, which is you've got to entrap her in devotion so that the Black King can violate the White Queen. There is this sort of this line, by the burning affection I bear to the rape of devotion, which obviously is the leapfrog for the Black Bishop's pawn to attempt his own assault in a moment. But that's not actually what he's asking him to do. He's asking him to set up the scene. You know, this is a mission creep thing that he's going to do on his own initiative, which is going to create all sorts of problems for the black chess pieces. Liza?
Yeah.
So this is a Catholicism thing, right? The rape of devotion is not so much a sexual thing as that he wants to get her away from her beliefs and into the dark darkness of his.
Yes, absolutely. So in that sense, it's a bit of a red herring, but it also isn't, if that makes sense. It's a difficult line because of that, because it makes us immediately think of what he's about to do is actually the Order of the King, where in fact it isn't the Order of the King. The King has... she's there to be basically converted to be used as as a means of getting access to the White Queen, because she is the White Queen's page, maid, effectively. So that line, by its nature, I'm slightly worried about, because I think it may not, to a listener, land clearly. But then maybe I'm just being paranoid.
I think it's supposed... Well,
it's supposed to be, but it's that thing of it's slippery in that way.
It's slippery. It's a loaded word, but I think it's supposed to convey both. I mean, that is, the Black King probably intends it simply to mean conversion, but the pawn has other things on his mind.
Yes.
And I think for our ears, we hear in that phrase, the rape of devotion, it's the word rape that we hear more than the word devotion, because of our secular times, I think. So that might be a fully modern issue, I think.
I just wonder whether it's an actual turn of phrase, or whether it's deliberately there to associate this confession from a Protestant country as a negative thing, as something violent. That might have been the intention at the time.
Yeah, I've never heard it before, but that means nothing.
Eric.
I was just going to say that maybe, like, because obviously these are orders that he's received. Mm. So it technically, if this is audio, you could just have them as sort of read by the person playing the Black King? Or would that just be too confusing? With a filter, obviously, sort of like, you know, like a radio, like when over a radio kind of thing. So then, like, when he jumps back to Sir, after my desire hath took a julep, it's like dismissing it.
Yeah, that's possible. It might be more confusing. Again, that's one for the edit. That's the one to record the Black King doing it anyway, just in case, and see how it comes out in the edit. Because again, sometimes these things, we can overthink them and say, oh, it won't read. And then actually you listen and you go, no, it's fine. Making a note. Remember, part of this sense of uncertainty that I'm doing here is all part of the performative nature of these sessions for our listeners at home, to go through all of the questions that we ask, even if we actually already know the answers, or think we do, until we get it horribly, horribly wrong. Let us continue with the scene, because we've only done two speeches, and I wasn't going to spend nearly as much time on this part of the scene anyway. So we know now that the Black King has a terrible plan. We also know that the Black Bishop's pawn is going to do something, or attempts to do something, really quite horrible. So any sense of unease should now be ramped up. And see where this scene takes us. White Queen's pawn now speaks to the Black Bishop's pawn.
Holy sir, too long I've missed you. Oh, your absence starves me. Hasten for time's redemption, worthy sir. Lay your commands as thick and fast upon me as you can speak them. How I thirst to hear them! Set me to work upon this spacious virtue, which the poor span of life's too narrow for, boundless obedience, the humblest, yet the mightiest of all duties, well here set down a universal goodness.
By the holiness of garment, her safe innocence hath frighted the full meaning from itself. She's further off from understanding now the language of my intent than at first meeting.
For virtue's sake, good sir, command me something. Make trial of my duty in some small service. And as you find the faith of my obedience there, then trust it with a greater.
You speak sweetly. I do command you first, then.
With what joy I do prepare my duty.
To meet me and seal a kiss of love upon my lips.
Huh?
At first disobedient. In so little, too. How shall I trust you with a greater, then, which was your own request?
Pray, send not back mine innocence to wound me. Be more courteous. I must confess, much like an ignorant plaintiff who, presuming on the fair path of his meaning, goes rashly on till on a sudden brought into the wildness of law by words dropped unadvisedly, hurts his good cause, and gives his adversary advantage by it. Apply it you can best, sir. If my obedience and your command can find no better way, fond men command and wantons best obey.
If I can, at that distance, send you a blessing, is it not nearer to you in mine arms? It flies from these lips, dealt abroad in parcels, and I, to honour thee above all daughters, invite thee home to the house, where thou mayest surfeit on that which others miserably pine for, a favours which the daughters of great potentates would look of envy's colour but to hear.
Good men may err sometimes. You're mistaken, sure. If this be virtue's path, 'tis a most strange one. I never came this way before.
That's your ignorance, and therefore shall that idiot still conduct you, that knows no way but one, nor ever seeks it? If there be 20 ways to some poor village, 'tis strange that virtue should be put to one. Your fear is wondrous faulty. Cast it from you. 'Twill gather else in time a disobedience too stubborn for my pardon.
Have I locked myself at unawares into sin's servitude with more desire of goodness? Is this the top of all strict order and the holiest of all societies, the three vowed people for poverty, obedience, chastity? The last the most forgot? When a virgin's ruined, I see the great work of obedience is better than half finished.
What a stranger are you to duty grown? What distance keep you? Must I bid you come forward to a happiness yourself should sue for? 'Twas ne'er so with me. I dare not let this stubbornness be known. 'Twould bring such fierce hate on you. Yet presume not to make that courteous care a privilege for wilful disobedience. It turns then into the blackness of a curse upon you. Come, come, be nearer.
Nearer?
Was that scorn? I would not have it prove so for the hopes of the grand monarchy. If it were like it, let it not dare to stir abroad again. A stronger ill will cope with't.
Bless me, threatens me, and quite dismays the good strength that should help me. I never was so doubtful of my safety.
'Twas but my jealousy. Forgive me, sweetness. Yours is the house of meekness, and no venom lives under that roof. Be nearer. Why so fearful? No nearer the altar, the more safe and sacred.
But nearer to the offerer, oft more wicked.
Plain and most insufferable contempt. My glory I have lost upon this woman in freely offering that she should have kneeled a year in vain for. My respect is darkened. Give me my reverence again thou robbed me of in thy repulse. Thou shalt not carry it hence.
Huh?
Thou art too great a winner to depart, and I too deep a loser to give way to it.
Oh, heaven!
Lay me down, reputation, before thou stirst. Thy nice virginity is recompense too little for my love. 'Tis well if I accept of that for both. Thy loss is but thine own. There's art to help thee, and fools to pass thee to. In my discovery, the whole society suffers, and in that, the hope of absolute monarchy eclipsed. Assurance thou canst make none for thy secrecy, but by thine honour's loss, that act must awe thee.
Oh, my distressed condition!
Dost thou weep? If thou hadst any pity, this necessity would wring it from thee. I must else destroy thee. We must not trust the policy of Europe upon a woman's tongue.
Then take my life, sir, and leave mine honour for my guide to heaven.
Take heed, I take not both, which I have vowed, if longer thou resist me.
Help! Oh, help!
Art thou so cruel for an honour's bubble to undo a whole fraternity and disperse the secrets of most princes locked in us?
For heaven and virtue's sake!
Must force confound?
There is a noise within.
Ha! What's that? Silence, if fair worth be in thee.
I'll venture my escape upon all dangers now.
Who comes to take me? Let me see that pawn's face, or his proud, tympanous master, swelled with state wind, which being once pricked in the convocation house, the corrupt air puffs out, and he falls shriveled.
I will discover thee, arch hypocrite, to all the kindreds of the earth.
And exit the White Queen's pawn. The dynamics of this scene, it's one where getting a sense of the physical, the room, you know, sometimes you record things and you do them very flatly in a room and dialogue occurs. This is where actually the dynamics of the sound of the room and where people are in the room and in the relation to each other matters. So this is on a technical level a really interesting scene to record to get that sense of movement to and from and where people are going, obviously depending on the quality of the audio equipment that people are listening to it on. You know, if people are listening to it on rubbish speakers in mono, they won't get all the hard work that inevitably this scene will take to do. I think there's a question of also the White Queen's pawn. There are hints in the way the dialogue is structured that there might be some more extemporary sort of calling of help within that latter stage. Mm-hmm. It seems that that there's an option there for that. What is the noise within is a question. It's quite an important question for us. What is the noise? Is it someone going, who is making that noise and who is responding? And that's a distraction allowing the White Queen's pawn to escape. Other thoughts? Liza.
Well, it seems to me that even just in an audio medium, you would still have to, as it were, block the scene to convey what was meant to be happening and sort of where it escalates from the Black Bishop's pawn just being sleazy verbally to cutting off her way of escape. Does he ever physically take hold of her to prevent her escape or... You know, what point does that happen? And I thought the two actors did a wonderful job of conveying those changes in shade. But for an audio thing, you'd also need to block, quote unquote, block things like proximity to the mic, volume of voice, sounds of struggle, if there is struggle. Mm.
I mean, certainly at the very end, before the noise within, you get the impression that, you know, he's lunging, as it were, towards the end, and the help, oh help, that there could be a struggle going on at that point. Whereas before, you get the impression that it's he makes an approach, he moves away in different levels. I mean, the fact that he's talking about, you know, come to the altar, you know, there's something, you know, really quite obscene suggested there.
There is that. It reminds me of some things written about 10th century popes, which modesty forbids me to quote on this podcast. There's the altar comment, and then he reacts with anger to the fact that she won't come nearer to him willingly.
We have this continuation of the spin from earlier of the obedience thing in the book And, you know, he goes with the disobedience thing, you know, look at what I'm wearing. Surely you must obey everything I say, for I am a priest and a man and all those things.
And I think that's the point where he starts blocking her exit, probably just putting himself between her and the door. But then, lay me down reputation before thou stirrest is a stronger thing than we've heard from him. And something has to happen to make her start crying. Because he says, dost thou weep?
Yeah, but there's also other interesting things about the way they're talking. There are times when they seem to be doing asides, but they're not. You know, they're clearly saying these things to each other, but it's almost like actually the White Queen's pawn is talking about themselves in the third person. Like they're starting to distance themselves from the situation that they're currently in, which is psychologically quite real and interesting. But the Black Bishop's pawn sort of almost picks up on it as well in the following dialogue. Can't find the bit where that is. The interesting question also of what is the her? It's sometimes written as her, and sometimes as ha. I don't know if that's a textual variant or just things. I think the first ha is probably more a her.
I liked that reading that Emma gave it, that sort of surprise and shock.
That's the turning point.
Because
before that she's like, Yes, I'm going to do really cool, virtuous stuff. Can't wait. Tell me. She's got a complete idea in her head of what it is. And then he says what it is. It's like, not what she's expecting at all. She's thrown for a moment. So I thought of it as a kind of like a,
Yeah.
What? Yeah.
But all of these exclamations, there's a lot of them turn up in the play, actually, continually, as to what that those sounds are and can be.
Yes, often at this period, people write in ha, H-A, where we in our era might write ah, A-H, or, and as actors, we might just take that as a vocal response of some kind.
Yeah, absolutely, yes. So that's just the thing of just don't be too dogmatic. And I say, when I was talking about later on, you know, when we, you know, the White Queen's pawn hears a noise off, and, you know, does start shouting at one point, you know, help, oh, help. Are there more helps and calls while she's attempting to escape? Or is that just dialogue as writ? How does the Black Bishop's pawn precisely get distracted? And how does that final moment actually in the scene work? We don't have to come up with answers now, by the way. That's a slightly more rhetorical one. But anyway, Eric.
Well, I think also in the nature of most violent films and sort of scenes in, well, not just of this period, but generally, it gets faster and faster. So it starts off as sort of, where is it? Like, you know, you speak sweetly, I do command you first, then. And then obviously he's getting more excited than she's getting. Like, oh my God, I'm going to do something good. And then he goes to meet me. And then, as Emma pointed out, that's the turning point. And seal a kiss of love upon my lips. She's like, okay, awkward. I'm not really interested in this. And then it slowly gets, he gets more sort of desperate and angry about the situation. So obviously you could also have music, you could have sort of sound effects of, like, you know, dramatic violins or whatever you want. But yeah, I think it would depend on sort of, because his speeches keep their length as well. So you would have, like, the White Queen's pawn seems to have the air knocked out of her at some point. Like, good men may err sometimes. You're mistaken, sure. If this be virtue's path, 'tis the most strange one. I never came this way before. And then, you know, he goes, you're ignorant. And she's like, wait a minute. This is not what I signed up for. She starts to realize, like, as she's speaking. And then sort of, with her nearer, is kind of like, nearer, yeah, right, I'm not going to come near you. And then he's clearly coming closer on his part as well. It's not just her sort of, I don't know, yeah. And then, be nearer, why so fearful? I'm fine, you know, yeah. It's sort of, I'm safe. You can be with me. It's perfectly fine. I don't have a dagger behind my back or whatever you want to, you know, like it's that kind of energy. And then it switches to, thou art too great a winner to depart. Like sort of, he's lowering his own status to sort of pretend that he's safe. And she goes, oh, heaven. And he's kind of still going on with the whole, you know, exposition speech thing.
Well, he's trying different approaches. And there's again, this is one of those scenes where the dynamics of pacing and the way that the addresses work shift. And the White Queen's pawns trying to shift her position in terms of how the hell do I get out of this room? Question becomes more and more uppermost in her mind.
But you can also kind of see that, like, if this were on a stage as opposed to, you know, audio, they would be getting closer, and then the Black Bishop's pawn is kind of like, dost thou weep? And you can imagine, like, sort of either, well, not necessarily a slap, but like some form of violence, as in like throwing her to the floor, that kind of thing, and then, take my life, sir, because he's already blocked her exit. She can't do anything at this point. And then help, oh help, because then the noise within comes later. So it's like distraction, kick him in the shins and run off kind of thing, hopefully.
And Liza.
Yeah, I mean, coming back to Robert's question about how we stage, or how we audio stage that part of the scene before the noise within, I think... Take and leave mine honor for my guide to heaven. Take heed I take not both, which I have vowed, if longer thou resist me. I would guess that, you know, you could stage him taking hold of her there. And then overlapping help, oh help, with art thou so cruel, overlapping her lines with his. Although I would want the audience to hear, must force confound... Before the noise interrupts them,
feels close mic work. That, you know, the impression that they're close, the sound of material. You know, that there are the ways of conveying that. I mean, this is all. You know, the dynamics are the question of how do you make this scene really, really uncomfortable and horrible, is one of those things in an audio medium we could, how far do we want to go, actually?
Sorry, Emma.
Oh, just a quick thing. Where was I? Yeah, I think there's quite a lot of clues in the text as to where the kind of physical actions may occur. It sort of almost dictates it, I feel like. So you've got this kind of, they start at this distance, and then you have the Black Bishop's pawns line, thou art too great a winner to depart, and I too deep a loser to give way to it, suggests you're not gonna leave. That could be the moment where you maybe hear the sound of a door closing, for example. Mm. Like he's moved to the other side of her, closed the door, turned around, faced her. And then like, the dynamic shifts after that, and it kind of goes up another notch.
Mm. Mm. Yes. And that's the idea of a door closing, a key turning. Lindsay, did you want to?
Just slightly on a tangent. I just wanted to draw some attention to some of the language in this, which is so interesting. This last sort of image, if you like, before the scene is interrupted. Excuse me. Let me see that pawn's face or his proud tympanous master, sort of suggesting, and swelled with state wind. I mean, I don't know what this noise is off yet, but it's certainly timpani and the sound of wind, as in maybe trumpets, you know, wondering what kind of noise this is that's coming on. But it's also a very interesting image. His proud timpanous master swelled with state wind, which being once pricked in the convocation house, the corrupt air puffs out and he falls shriveled. Such a strong passage there, I think, in terms of the imagery and the language. And I mean, there's a lot of that throughout, but, you know, just sort of, you know, it's really worth, I think, wrestling with the issues that the text creates for phrases like that, passages like that, I think.
Yeah, I mean, that passage I found a bit of a problem because, A, it sort of slows down the White Queen's escape there. And also, I'm not, I sort of think I know what it means, but I'm not sure if anyone has a reason to know what it means. I almost feel like it could either go or be slightly moved as an alternative use somewhere else. Again, that's more an edit question, whether in the scene it feels that it's in the way of getting the White Queen out of there, Quaint's pawn out of there. Liza?
I mean, you could cut after Timpanus Master and then cut to the White Queen's line, White Queen's pawn's line, but I do, or Lindsay says no.
I just think
who comes to take me?
Or you can play on the fact that you can suggest aurally that the Black Bishop's pawn has the White Queen's pawn in a vice-like grip of some kind, or in some way overmastered physically, so that he earns himself the time to say all of that until that moment breaks.
I feel like he's let go of her at the... I feel like he's let go of her to go and take up a weapon of some kind. Because I think you're right about the nature of the noise, that his speech gives you the clue that it is drums and winds, maybe trumpets, maybe cornets. That it sounds like he's being... that it sounds like there's an army or something coming. So I think he must let go of her because this speech is martial and defiant. So maybe he's gone to, I don't know, pick up his pastoral staff or something. He's not a bishop, is he? I don't know what clergy rank he is.
That's actually a very good question, actually, which maybe the text will give us more data on. It's the let me see who's coming to take me, which would be him unlocking the door, at which point gives the cue for the White Queen's pawn to knee him in the bollocks and run, because the door has been opened. And it's this thing, who is it at the door? Who's at the door? That pawn... proud Timpanus Mars, you know, rattle with the lock kind of thing.
Or is it, you know, a kind of a come and get me, whoever you are, because blah blah blah. Is it that kind of thing? That sort of, you know, I can fight you all with one hand tied behind my back kind of feeling. Which distracts him momentarily from the real point, which is the White Queen's pawn. And, you know, he says a bit later in a bit we haven't read yet, you know, he's like, well, how did she get away from me? You know, it's sort of like he sort of doesn't quite understand what happened. Not very easy to convey in an audio. Not quite easy. We need a sort of panto transformation scene. Say whoosh, she's gone.
Well, say I think conveying how she leaves the room and the confusion that's coming in, because the thing is we break straight into what comes next, and I think that the driver is of the action is will be enough to carry that forward. Anyway, we need to go forward because I wasn't planning on spending quite so much time on those ins and outs, but they're all good ins and outs, and we'll feed questions later on. And remember, if you're listening to this at home, remember this production hasn't happened yet. And if you have any thoughts or comments or additions that you'd like to get in touch and share your thoughts, some people have on previous episodes, lots of interesting responses. I say episodes, episode. The second episode has only just dropped. We haven't had any response from that yet. These ongoing questions, and of course, hopefully we'll be able to do this play in multiple different ways. So there will not be an version. There'll be lots of versions, because that's what we do. Anyway, we will continue. We'll go for the White Queen has exited. White Queen's pawn has exited. Black Bishop's pawn is left alone. In a moment, the Black Queen's pawn will enter. But Black Bishop's pawn, take it away.
Confusion! In that voice rings the alarm of my undoing. How? Which way escaped she from me?
Are you mad? Can lust infatuate a man so hopeful? No patience in your blood? The dog star reigns, sure. Time and fair temper would have wrought her pliant. I spied a pawn of the White House walk near us and made that noise on purpose to give warning for mine own turn, which end in all I work for.
Methinks I stand over a powder vault and the match now a kindling. What's to be done?
Ask the Black Bishop's counsel. You're his pawn. 'Tis his own case. He will defend you mainly. Ah, and haply here he comes, with the Black Knight, too.
But before we get to the Black Knight, we did have some useful information here. I spied a pawn of the White House walk near us and made that noise on purpose to give warning. So some passerby from the White House, who we, I don't think, ever find out.
Is it the knight who now that certain things are denied him, he's taken to music?
I don't know.
Well, it's martial music. A knight would probably have, you know, a couple of drummers or something with
him. Well, so yeah,
a small brass band.
Yeah, and it's a question. We still don't really know for certain what the noise is per se. I mean, it might not be a noise; it could just be people making noise. It's down as alarum, but it could also be down as alarm. So it could be a trumpet. Someone could be blowing a horn. To a degree, it doesn't matter. It's only a pretext for her to escape. But a decision. You know, it's someone rang the fire alarm, isn't it? Basically,
That'd be quite funny. That'd be a funny way of doing it. You know, please leave the building now.
Mr. Sands is in the conference room.
And then the sprinklers come on.
Eric,
I was just wondering. Are they indoors or outdoors? Because it does seem kind of like, because the Black Queen's pawn goes, I spy the pawn of the White House walk near us. Therefore, yeah, it just seems like, you know, there is a danger of being seen as well. I don't know if that's just me or...
Yeah. Well, I think the logic is that this is a court setting because there's various embassies going on. So it's... You know, if you think of it like being a massive sort of conference center with lots of, you know, people all staying in the same hotel, they're all a bit on top of each other. They're all about, there's lots of different, you know, people are about. I doubt it's literally outdoors. I think it's more along those lines. Lindsay?
Yeah, just thinking if at any point it was staged actually on a chessboard, then you've got two pawns who can only move one square at a time in whatever direction they want to move in. So that's that. I think that can give an indication of the dynamic, and in a way, perhaps visually, and again, this is not necessarily for the audio drama, but thinking of it in this way could possibly help with other things, that, you know, the White Queen's pawn can't actually escape because she can't move more than one square at a time. Kind of thing. I don't know if that made sense, but
no, it's a good point. Yeah, she exits rather rapidly, suggesting that, you know, she's leapt onto the horse of a knight or something, and suddenly jumped around some corners. Anyway, that was a brief pause to just get us in place, and also to get the new people in the scene in place. I'm generally not reading the stage directions for these readings, so that seems to be the best way to do it. We have the arrival of the Black Bishop, and we have the arrival of the Black Knight, and I'll be reading the Black Knight. Eric, I think, are you the Black Bishop? I think you are.
I think so.
We've now got four people on stage, or in the room, and later on, at some point, Emma will return as somebody else. Anyway, Black Bishop, I think, we enter.
Oh, you've made noble work for the White House yonder. This act will fill the adversary's mouth and blow the Lutheran's cheeks till they crack again.
This will advance the great monarchical business in all parts well and help the Magents forward. What I in 7 years laboured to accomplish, 1 minute sets back by some codpiece college still.
I dwell not, sir, alone in this default. The Black House yields me partners.
All more courtless.
Qui corte caste, that's my motto ever. I've travelled with that word over most kingdoms and lain safe with all nations of a leaking bottom. I've been as often tossed on Venus' seas as trimmer, fresher vessels when sounder barks have lain an anchor that is kept the door.
He hath no witness then?
None.
Gross witness? When a wet a man of his society to mischief with a witness.
I have done it then. Away, upon the wings of speed, take post horse, cast 30 leagues of earth behind thee suddenly, leave letters antedated with our house, 10 days at least from this.
Oh, Bishop, I taste thee. Good, strong episcopal counsel, take Botlant. 'Twill serve thee all thy journey.
But good sir, how for my getting forth unspied?
There's check again.
No, I'll help that.
Ah, well said, my bouncing Jesuitist.
There lies a secret vault.
Away, make haste then.
Run for my cabinet of intelligences, for fear they search the house. Good bishop, Burnham rather, I cannot stand a Pickham now.
Be gone, the danger is all in you.
I'm just going to pause there because of the morality of this scene is in many ways I find this scene that's element of the scene the more disturbing because this is the banality of the cover up the Black Knight comes in and basically just goes. Well, if you want to assault someone, do it properly. that's basically his complaint. It is not that you should not do bad things. It is you didn't do it. You didn't organize it well enough. And then it's this thing of, oh, we're going to have to burn the thing. How do we get him out? We've got to just send him off to a different parish, get him out. You know, how are we going to do that without him being seen? And it's just purely business of, you know, how do we cover this up?
It's, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Absolutely no relevance whatsoever in any way to anything that might be happening at any time since.
Yeah, no, I mean, this is the element of this which actually makes it really burn as a very, very modern play, actually. Mm. You know, we can find plays in which we have this question of sexual assault occurring. I don't know how many other plays there are that really cover the cover up side of it, and that this element of it that everybody's in on this, and you know that this idea that you can just move this bishop's pawn on somewhere else, you know, and it's just this is business as usualness to it all. Which is so disturbing and so, you know, accurate in so many ways. Eric? Yeah.
I was going to say, it's kind of there in Promos and Cassandra, but I can't remember if that's... This probably predates that, I don't know.
No. Promos and Cassandra is much earlier than this. And yes, yeah. does deal to a degree, but it's not quite so organised there.
Yeah.
You know, there are people willing to... You know, not believe but we don't have this sort of. Sorry, I'm cutting off, Eric.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say that this is a bit sort of like, you know, the spy that was burned, like exposed suddenly, and then they have to send him off somewhere else because they kind of he's still useful, but you know his cover has been blown.
Mm. And not unstandard practice for when you have a priest who's got caught in any kind of this kind of situation being moved to a different parish. Standard practice. That's not been happening for hundreds of years.
No. Exactly. Yeah.
But the fact that it almost comes across as comedy. That's why I find it so disturbing. Because of that. And not wanting to sort of gloss over that, actually, to, you know, to change that. It's a question of how you pitch this. And the way that goes, because it's such a fast little bit of action as well. Any other thoughts before we go on and move forward? Liza?
It does seem that it's not just why didn't you... I feel like it's not just why didn't you succeed in sexually assaulting this person. I think they start out by reprimanding him for having tried that at all when what he was supposed to do was convert her. Saying, what I in 7 years labored to accomplish, 1 minute sets back by some codpiece college. As in, you know, you were supposed to be thinking of the grand plan and instead you were thinking with your codpiece. And then the black bishop's pawn seems to say, well, I'm not the only one who does that. And the black knight's qui caute caste, who is cautious, is chaste. And then the black bishop moves to damage control with, there are no witnesses. Okay. The black knight is like, yeah, since when did someone like this summon a witness for something like this? So I feel like they do cover it up. Yes, they do move him on, but they do take him to task for having tried it in the first place, I think.
Yes, but in a sense for doing it badly, for getting caught is the issue.
Yeah. What exactly is the check that they're referring to? Because the black bishop says there's check again, and it's that sort of like, you know,
they'll get taken as a piece. If they try to escape, they'll be seen. Therefore, their piece will be taken. So a nominal return to the conceit of the play with that. Right. We now go to the cover-up more formally, as it were, with some more business. We will have somebody else enter us. I'm sure Emma returns as somebody. The Black Knight's pawn. I have a pawn too. Isn't that lovely? All ranks of societies here. Okay, so we have the re-entrance of the Black Bishop's pawn has exited, but now we have re-entered the Black Queen's pawn with cabinet. So let's open out all the filing cabinets and get the shredders warmed up. Let me see Queen's pawn, how formally have packed up his intelligences. Have laid them all in truckle beds, methinks, and like court harbingers have writ their names in chalk upon their chambers. Anglica? This is the English house. What news there, Tro? By this light, most of these are bawdy epistles. Time they were burnt indeed. Whole bundles of them. Here's from his daughter Blanche and daughter Bridget from their safe sanctuary in the Whitefriars. These from two tender sisters of compassion in the bowels of Bloomsbury. These from the nunnery in Drury Lane. A fire, good Jesuitess, a fire. What have you there?
A note, sir, of state policy and an exceeding safe one.
Oh, pray, let's see it, sir. To sell away all the powder in a kingdom to prevent blowing up. That's safe. I'll label it. There's a facetious observation now and fits my humour better. He writes here, some wives in England will commit adultery and then send to Rome for a bull for their husbands.
Have they those shifts?
Oh, there's no female breathing sweeter and subtler. Here, wench, take these papers, scorch me 'em soundly, burn them to French russet and put 'em in again.
Why, what's your mystery?
Oh, sir, 'twill mock the adversary strangely if e'er the house be searched. 'Twas done in Venice upon the Jesuitical expulse there, when the inquisitors came all spectacled to pick out syllables out of the dung of treason, as children pick out cherry stones, yet found none but what they made themselves with ends of letters. Do as I bid you, pawn!
Fear not. In all I love roguery too well to let it fall. How now? What's news with you?
The sting of conscience afflicts me so for that inhuman violence on the white bishop's pawn. It takes away my joy, my rest.
This 'tis to make an eunuch. You made a sportant, then.
Cease aggravation. I come to be absolved for it. Where's my confessor? Why dost thou point to the ground?
'Cause he went that way.
What's that?
Come, help me in with this cabinet, and after I have singed these papers thoroughly, I'll tell thee a strange story.
If be sad, 'tis welcome.
'Tis not troubled with much mirth, sir.
And they exit. So we've got two little scenettes here. Again, structurally, I'm thinking about opportunities here for solving the exposition problem we have with Act One. Because in Act One we have this problem of the Black Knight's pawn is the one who gelded the chap who would have been marrying the White Queen's pawn, and he's feeling very guilty and he would like to be forgiven, and that's what he's here for. There's part of me wondering whether this is useful expositionary kind of dialogue that could be used elsewhere. Most of this dialogue doesn't refer to the burning stuff that's going on in this scene, so I'm wondering if we can tidy up some of those problems earlier with bits of this. That's just the thought out loud. There's no definite plan for that. But definitely Act One is the act where impositions are more likely to occur, whereas this scene so far, apart from just twiddling with it, on the whole works quite well on a structural level, that making me happy with. Here we effectively have the Black Knight doing some stand-up routine about the secrets that they have that are to be shredded / burnt here. I wonder whether there's more mileage or less mileage to be got out of that.
Yes, I mean, all the nuns cited are obviously prostitutes. Brothels were known as nunneries in those days, and I think I'm not sure where the White Friars. It will have been one of the old White Friars abbeys from before the Reformation. Drury Lane, there was no nunnery, there was no actual nunnery in Drury Lane, it's a brothel. Sisters of Compassion in the bowels of Bloomsbury.
I have to say, the bowels of Bloomsbury is a phrase I might use more often.
So all the letters from England are naughty. Presumably all the prostitutes are actually also spies, and they're sending them dirt on their clients and what acts they have got up to.
It's not wholly clear how to get that across. Clearly, I think on the whole, it's one of those just let it fly and hope it lands kind of stuff. I don't think you can put anything in there to sort of just to spell it out for anyone. If it was on stage, someone would be doing hip thrusting at this point. You just know it. That's what.
Well, if it was on stage, you could have crude drawings that some of the audience could see, and you could have the Black Queen's pawn looking over his shoulder and going woo.
Yeah,
and,
like, you know, there's all sorts of that kind of
drawing
stuff.
Upside down.
But yeah, we've just basically got lots of destroying things, and it's that thing, just being careful with the phrase fire is, you know, maybe just tweak it, you know, put them in the fire rather than it sounding like, you know, just to make that clear. But nothing fundamental. Eric.
I do appreciate the irony of, like, you know, the black bishop's pawn having a daughter called Blanche. Just this kind of, yeah, which means white in French. Just kind of ironic there. And also the fact that they're in the Whitefriars. Anyway, safe sanctuary in the Whitefriars, totally. Yeah, I don't know. Just kind of, a lot of it is kind of flipping through papers. So I guess you have sound effects there, and obviously the sound effects of the fire, which would be, you know, just adding things and throwing things and tossing things to the fire. Mm. I don't know. Just some of it seems a bit, yeah.
Well, say it's the conjunction of the two sequences of this scene. You know, we are going from a scene of high drama to quite low comedy very quickly between the two, which feels incredibly deliberate and uncomfortable in a way that I think works. But yeah, it's the casual again. It's like we've done this before. We've burnt cells before. We've got rid of people before. But again, it's once the plot gets going, you know, it does things very, very quickly. Actually, I mean, even, you know, the White Queen's Pawn, Black Bishop's Pawn section of this scene, you know, there's not much fat there. Actually, it plays that scene. I mean, it's probably a longer scene just simply because bits of it will be slower and the pacing will change. Whereas here, it's a lot of action. I kind of want to just change. I just kind of want a the sound of a shredder actually rather than a fire. I quite like the idea of just into the fire, twice burn it, as in now throw it on an actual fire, because it's really hard burning papers. It's really, really hard. Paper resists it in mass. Is when you've got to get it into smaller chunks. He said, like, you know, this had never been in this situation before. Someone else have a thought, please.
I just on the subject of burning papers, was I right in understanding in the text that the suggestion is that the semi-legible fragments charred are put back into the cabinet in order to poke fun at the people who are going to try to investigate or something like that?
I missed that. I certainly saw them.
Yes, Lindsay, I think you're right. Is burn them to French russet and put them in again. And then they reference something that doubtless already happened in Venice when they expelled the Jesuits from Venice.
To pick out syllables of the dung of treason when the inquisitors came all spectacled as children pick out cherry stones yet found none.
Mm. But what they made themselves with just the
ends. Yeah, sort of trying to piece together. So like mocking the people, saying, yeah, there is evidence, but you're never going to find it. Mm. But we just want you to know that there is.
You know that we know that you know.
Yeah. And we are throwing shade at you by giving you a few syllables here and there on burnt fragments of paper. Mm. So
in that case, there's a clarity issue, you know, put them in again. Because when I was reading that, I was going to put them back in the fire again. It's like, you know, make sure they're definitely destroyed. But because I wasn't following what I was actually saying. So it's almost put them in the cabinet again. ? Alternate takes, perhaps. Eric, are you waving?
So in this context, it's like, I mean, going with the spy metaphor, is like the Black Queen's Pawn supposed to be like money penny or something? Sort of going, handing out people's, like, secretarial work and admin work, because she seems to know everything. And I've been wondering also, sort of in the context of this play, does it end with the Black King being, like, does it end when the house is captured, or does it end when the king is captured? Or something?
Yeah, when basically everybody gets put in the bag, all the black pieces get put in the bag at the end. And the Black Queen's Pawn's agenda is really interesting. We've got a few little asides here of going, I've got my own agenda. And you've got to remember that at the sort of halfway, two-thirds mark of this play, the plot goes in a really weird direction, which we need to unpack later on, because in a sense it's quite narratively straightforward the first half, with the consequences of what happens in this scene, and then the play goes in a very weird other direction, regarding the Black Queen's pawn, the Black Bishop's pawn, and the White Queen's pawn. All of the principals in this scene all get together and do something quite weird, of which the motivations I'm not wholly clear on. But that's an issue for another session as we try and figure out what the hell to do with that part of the play. Certainly what we will get is the question of, is the victim believed, coming up in the latter scenes, which intersects also with the wider politics of the play, of the, you know, in theory, the two houses are trying to reach some kind of accord. You know, there's all this diplomacy going on, but actually does it land, or does it not? And, you know, while at the same time, they're all still trying to take each other's pieces. I'm going to wind this session down, I think. I don't, primarily because I think there's been a lot of good discussion. I don't think there's anything really structural about this scene that, on an adaptive sense, I'm worried about or that I think we need to go over again. I think most of this is just record it well, with all of the caveats that we've been discussing here. But maybe in the edits, some bits get moved around a little bit. There are a few bits of clarity there. But any final thoughts in the room about the scene overall and their thoughts and feelings about what the scene overall is trying to do? Because it is doing some really big shifts in direction and tone, especially following on from the first act, which, you know, sets this up. Liza, do you have any final thoughts? You're allowed not to have any final thoughts, by the way, people. Don't let me force you to have final thoughts.
Well, I mean, earlier you raised a question as to what the agenda of the Black Queen's pawn was at this point, and it seems as though, Lindsay, I know you've played Mosca in Volpone, and it seems like the Black Queen's pawn in this scene is that kind of factotum, that sort of, basically, the person who does the dog's body job, but she's the one who gets things done.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit, I feel this sort of morphs into not really final thoughts, but this play for me is still a bit of an octopus of arms and tentacles going in different directions, and I haven't quite kind of been able to, for those listening, I'm doing the gesture of getting it into a circle or a hole or a globe of some kind.
I wish you could see this gesture. It's poetic.
Thing of beauty.
But it, yeah, so I can't kind of quite see exactly where these characters fit into a kind of schema that we might recognize from another work, you know, roughly contemporary. I'm honestly not sure. I mean, Mosca's the not just the factotum, but the puppet master as well. And so there's sort of a lot more going on there. And I don't know if that can also be said for the character that you played, Black Queen. No, I can't remember which. This is why we have numbers, because they're all Black Queen's Black born, something, something. Yes. So,
yeah. I mean, part of what reminded me of Mosca is that she states, "I love roguery too well to let it fall." So it's not just that she's efficient at getting things done. She loves stirring shit, it seems.
Yeah.
And they call her a Jesuitess. And at this point, if you say Jesuit to an English Protestant at this point, they think spy, they think agent, because that's one of the things that the Jesuits were doing at this time, was they had these colleges in northern continental Europe that they were training to churn out, and they were training renegade English Catholics to go back and act as priestly spies and try and unseat Elizabeth and later James, of course. Anyway, so when they say Jesuitess, I suppose it implies that she's an agent of some sort, but presumably not a handler, but an agent.
Bouncing Jesuitess as well.
Yes.
Definite bounce.
Emma, any final thoughts? I mean, it's an intense first half, as it were, and then terrible guilt for the second.
Yeah, quite a contrast. I don't know if I have anything particular to add. I did enjoy the contrast of the characters. Actually, we haven't mentioned the Black Knight's pawn at the end there. Yeah, I feel kind of funny. It's kind of funny in a way. He kind of comes on as like the embodiment of melancholy. I feel like he's very sort of heavy all over in his kind of body language and his speech. It's quite funny, really.
Yeah, I mean, he's tonally totally different, isn't he? He's just really morose.
Completely, you know? and then the section about the story at the end. If it's a sad story, give it to me, yeah. Yeah,
he's going to wallow in it. Well, I suppose I've never gelded anyone, so I don't know how it feels to do it.
Well, it's rather disturbing because it implies that he's become a better person and is actually feeling remorse for his actions. Because she says, well, you made a sport on it then. Presumably he murdered someone. Did he murder someone?
No, he gelded someone.
Ah.
He chopped their ghoulies off.
Oh, I thought she was saying his ghoulies had been chopped.
No. He did the de-ghoulification.
I see.
Well, he's feeling really bad about it. He didn't in Act One, or at least it didn't appear that he was feeling guilty in Act One. In Act One, it seemed like he was actually being a bit defiant, but I don't know if that's just a change of direction as the play went on, or just a character thing in the
Well,
background.
So now he feels sad about it.
Yeah, yeah,
and wants to be confessed.
Indeed, and there will be a. This is a feed for a scene later on. There will be quite a good scene, another quite fun scene about that, about the value of confessions. And pardons and that kind of thing that will have strict monetary value. Let's put it this way. It doesn't turn out well for him because, oddly enough, it's not being costed as an act. So there's no forgiveness for him because pay scale hasn't come through for his penance. Eric, any final thoughts?
Yeah, I guess, sort of, it's an interesting piece to deal with in terms of audio. I'm just trying to figure out how the black bishop's pawn exits, because obviously the black queen's pawn goes there, lies a secret vault, and then sort of, I don't know if that's referring to the check sort of part of the game or not.
Well, this chessboard obviously has a little trapdoor you can go underneath, and they cheat at chess, let's put it this way.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if that's sort of his way out, sort of going through the trapdoor to leave so he can get post horse and all that stuff, or if he literally gets on a horse and casts 30 leagues of earth behind him. Because it's interesting how the exit is not specified. Well, you have all these options, and also kind of, I don't know, do you get horseshoes and coconuts or something? Or
Well, I think, because it depends on how you say the line, there lies a secret vault, or there lies a secret vault. I quite like, there lies a secret vault, pulls lever,
one man Foley.
Yeah, big door opens and it's like there's a secret passage kind of thing, and go make haste. So yeah, I quite like that idea.
But then the go make haste line comes before she exits, and then the black bishop's pawn goes, okay, you go get my stuff before they in case they search the house. So I'm kind of like, what is going on there? There is some
crosstalk, because, of course, he's sending her one way and he wants him to go the other way. So it's a good question as to who he's talking to at that particular night, that particular moment. I would suggest he's talking to the Black Bishop's pawn. And the Black Bishop's pawn says, numbering's
ditch
wrong
the
there.
Drugs.
Sorry, I'm just looking at a note there, it's fine. The Black Bishop pawn, says run. Ooh, yeah, that's interesting. Might move some of those lines around as well for clarity, but that's a minor tweak, twiddle thing to see if it's clear what's going on. Because you know what that really makes me feel a horror for is just the idea that now I have to do some footsteps. I hate editing footsteps and footsteps down a passageway and people running in and out of a room. Have you any idea how horrible it is editing the sound of people walking about? If the entire play could be done with people on unicycles, I would do it.
I think having the Black Bishop's pawn disappear unceremoniously through a trap door is better than footsteps receding and galloping horseshoes and things like that.
Trust me, there will be hours. It's hours of work to record and then edit in the stuff to go with this. Unless we all do it in a large space and we might do it. That might be a better way to do it, actually, is if we get a large enough recording space and we actually do the whole thing dynamically with radio mics so that central thing. Yeah, we could do it that way. That might be better than we can. Yeah. Ignore me. I'm just talking aloud, saying words aloud now in ways. I think I've definitely run out of steam. All that remains is to thank Eric, Lindsay, Liza and Emma for reading through this text. Again, thoughts and feelings and ideas to us at Beyond Shakes on Twitter, or you can email us admin@beyondshakespeare.org. You can become a patron and help support the funding of this play when eventually we get around to doing it in its various forms. Or you could even fling us a coffee. You can go to ko-fi.com/beyondshakespeare. You can just flung us a few quid if you want. There may even, by the time this goes out, be some kind of special specific PayPal link to actually help fund the producing of this particular bit of content. But there might not be. Look in the show notes, the show links, they'll all be there, and you can do them, or none of them. You can just sit back and listen to the podcast. It's fine. That's allowed too. Thank you very much, everyone, and goodbye.